Welcome back to the DEI Podcast. I'm Max Gaston.
Paris Moneta.
Chorofa Jomotapo.
Nicholas Smith.
On today's episode, I am joined by three incredible students from Notre Dame Law School, each bringing unique perspectives and lived experiences that highlight the vast diversity within Black identity. Jago is an attorney from South Africa who's pursuing an LLM in human rights at Notre Dame. Nick is a Juris Doctor student who moved to the United States from Jamaica for undergrad and is still here now. Paris is Kenyan, but raised in America, also pursuing her Juris Doctor. And for my part, I'm a first-generation Haitian American. We're going to dive into what it means to be Black in different contexts, because as you may have heard before, Black people are not a monolith. We don't all come from the same place, think the same way, vote the same, or even share the same cultural norms. And yet there's a shared thread of experience that ties us all together. I'm excited to talk to Paris, Nick, and Chego to explore their journeys as law students at Notre Dame, their cultural identities, and how those identities shape their views on law, justice, and life. So buckle up for an engaging and thoughtful conversation on what it really means to embrace the diversity of Black identities. Nick, Paris, and Chego, welcome to the DEI Podcast.
Thank you.
So we've been talking about having this conversation for a while, and I'm really glad that we're finally able to make it happen. As you heard in the intro, there's this common misconception. I think it's starting to change more and more with maybe social media, but the idea that Black people are all the same, or that Black is somehow synonymous with African-American, clearly it's not. And even in that context, narrowly, that all Black people maybe have pretty much similar backgrounds. Maybe just to get us going, we can have each of you talk a little bit about your particular identity. And Paris, since you're right next to me, why don't we start with you? Tell us about where you're from and how your cultural identity has shaped your perspective as a law student.
Okay, so I'm originally from Kenya. I was born in Kenya, but I moved to the States when I was really young. I was 6 years old. So I grew up in the States. I have this analogy I use. I was one girl in two worlds. So at home, it's a very Kenyan household, right? Kenyan ideology, Kenyan principles, values. However, when I go out in the world, nobody cares. Nobody knows. I'm just this Black girl walking around in Maryland. So that was definitely a cultural shift that I had to reckon with growing up and being able to live in those two worlds with confidence. And so that's definitely shaped my view of Blackness in America. However, at the same time, I think I have this deep-seated interest in making sure those two worlds can collide a bit better. I think that most African Americans don't necessarily have a great understanding on what people from Africa really have values in, and how their principles and how they actually live in general, day-to-day life. And I think that for the most part, a lot of African immigrants don't necessarily have the greatest conception or understanding of African American history and the fact that they are equally American as any other American. So that's my identity and Blackness.
As I was listening to you talk, I was hearing myself say things to other people about my Black identity because, you know, I'm Haitian American. And I always say it's like standing in two worlds. In your household, it's one thing. And then in the world, it's a completely different thing. But people don't see that. They just see, you know, another Black guy walking down the street. But it really does inform this dual sense of, no, I am completely in this world, but I'm also completely in that world too. That's a really, we'll talk more about that. But Jekyll, do you want to tell us a little bit about your identity and how it shapes your perspective as a law student?
I grew up in South Africa. I'm from a village. And so my first basically encounter with race or just feeling particularly Black was when I left that village and I went to varsity and this was in Cape Town. So, and I remember a colored friend we have we have colored people in South Africa. So I remember a colored friend of mine, Nicole, kept saying to me, we were at a concert and she was like, the people behind you are moving behind, you know, the people behind you keep moving further. And then it turned out it was because of my braids. I had never heard of anything like that. I didn't know race. I'd never had a discussion about race before. So then she just broke it down for me. She was like, listen, they're racist. They don't want to touch your braids. They don't want your braids to touch them. And that's that. And so I had to kind of like learn what that was, and eventually like you kind of you start seeing things, you know, whereas previously I did not. I mean, I was 19. So yeah, and so that was my first and then ever since then it's like it's always on the table. I make sure I make sure of it. I bring it up. I try to like I always try to weave it into anything I do. But that's only because I realize like when you suppress it, you know, when people suppress it, it always finds a way of sneaking up. And then when people are not prepared, and then you have to do the explaining, and that it's too much. So it's rather just put it on the table. So that was my experience.
But so like it was more like blackness or race was more of a salient factor. It was more of a relevant thing in the United States for you than it was living in South Africa.
I mean, no, like in South Africa already, because we have such similar, like, I suppose, histories with the states, because we had like apartheid, they had segregation. Yeah. And so in general, there are places that you go to in South Africa that are extremely white. Mm-hmm. And Cape Town is definitely one of them. So when I went to university, when I turned 18, I went into a predominantly white space. And so like that was pretty much what me being like finding out what race is properly and actually like understanding, oh, okay, intolerance, you know, and seeing it for the first time. That was pretty much because before that I came from a black village. Mm-hmm. Everybody was black. Mm-hmm. And so like South Africa still has this like tension, I suppose, with, you know, post-apartheid with, you know, yeah, white, blacks, which is also very similar to what may be happening here. Mm-hmm. I think the only difference probably is that back home, it's much more like we talk about it a lot more. And I think the difference here is that we don't talk about it as much. I found.
Really?
I think people are a little bit more polite about, let's say, they have a polite way of, you know, suppressing things. So just like, oh, you're good. and whereas back home, like people are generally, like if I'm in a queue and something is happening, let's say, let's say somebody's buying something and like somebody's rude to them and there's some sort of racial undertone. Let's say it's a white and a black person having this communication and we're in this queue. Someone else will hear this and they will say, you are wrong and you are racist. And also, like, I think more recently, like, South Africa criminalized, like, any racial hatred, like, basically speech. So if somebody were to use words that, you know, are considered, derogatory, hateful, and based on race, they could get arrested.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the difference.
There's a lot that we can unpack in there. I want to turn to Nick, but first, Shego, there was something that you said that I think really shows a great contrast between the cultural norms. Can you explain in the South African context what the word colored means? Because I think it's received differently in the United States than it is over there, but
yeah,
it is a different meaning behind it.
Yes. I mean, colored in South Africa is when we were first discovered. so the Dutch came and later the British. And so there is basically an entire race that came out of that. And those are colored people. So this could have been through rape. This could have been like, what the colonizers would be doing on their farms to women. So basically this would be like basically the mix between the two races. Mm-hmm. But then what then happened was that like then colored people on their own kind of like got married after, you know, or like basically I had their own children. So now in South Africa, when you like fill in a form, there is African, there is white, there is colored, there is Indian.
Right. So it's more like a mixed race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like when you enter university, when you apply for jobs, you get these categories and one of them is colored. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's used as a pejorative in the United States, something that used to be a way to refer to black people. I think it's interesting the way that, you know, a word can kind of just turn on a completely different meaning depending on where you're coming from. But Nick, let's go to you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your identity and how it shapes your perspective?
Sure, sure. So born and raised in Jamaica. I was born in Kingston, the capital, but I grew up in the parish of Clarendon in a community called Top Alston. It's a farming community. So I'm a country boy, you know, grew up in the countryside of Jamaica. My grandparents were farmers. My dad grew up farming before he became a police officer in Jamaica. I think in terms of Jamaica's relationship to race, it's not colored in the same way it is in the U.S. We, as a predominantly black country, I think we first see ourselves as Jamaicans, you know, as in terms of our identity in the world. You know, we know we're black. We're very proud to be black. But we're primarily like we're Jamaicans first, you know. I think colorism, for example, as I consider it a subset of, I say, racism is more a present reality for Jamaica. Like Jamaica is coming from a time where your proximity to whiteness is what determined your success, your access to opportunity in Jamaica. It and that, you know, also colors classism in Jamaica, where, you know, upper class to, you know, I guess middle class, you know, tends to in many instances look a certain way. So I think that's kind of our reality. And it was funny, you were talking earlier about how words related to race have a different meaning depending on where they're used. Mm-hmm. Like that was something that I found interesting when I moved to the US. For example, the terms like brown or brown skin in the US, like brown skin means like dark skin, you know, like, mm-hmm. like black, you're dark skin. But in Jamaica, brown skin means light skin. So I remember, I brought, you know, somebody I was dating a few years ago, brought them to Jamaica, and we're at the beach, and, you know, I guess in the thrill of being at the beach and, you know, the sun on their skin, they're like, oh, I love my brown skin. And this was a lighter skin person. And then they were, you know, screaming like, oh, I love my brown skin. And I had to like stop them, like say, hey, you can like say that here, because that would be the equivalent of, you know, somebody in the US, like a white person in the US saying like, oh my God, I love my white skin. Like, you know, so like that's essentially the context that, you know, it translates to in Jamaica. But yeah, so it was interesting moving to the US for undergrad and, you know, still primarily seeing myself as Jamaican first. And as you adjust to how you're perceived in a certain space, you begin to see that the identity that most impacts kind of, you know, I think, I guess all of your external interactions, the identity that matters most in the US at least seemed to be my blackness, you know, and there was a shift that started to happen as I assimilated of beginning to see myself as black first, because, you know, no one is going to look at me. This is the first space that I was in where no one looks at me and their first thought is that, oh, he's just another Jamaican. And their first thought is like, he's another black person. Mm-hmm. And over time, I got to understand what that actually meant. I think that's the general experience of my blackness from Jamaica to the US.
So being in the majority of the country as a black person in Jamaica, do you think that people who are not black in Jamaica also see themselves the same way?
Yeah, so in fact, our motto, the country's motto, is out of many, one people. You know, it speaks to kind of that racial mix. You know, though black people are the majority, you know, we have white people, we have Indians, we have Asians, you know, I guess Indians are Asians as well, but I guess East and South Asians, and other like racial groups. But the idea is that we're all one people, you know?
That's the thing too. So there's this idea, not just about black countries, but about any country, that you look a certain way primarily or exclusively if you come from there, right? So we had an LLM student a couple of years ago who was from Ireland. She was a black woman. And she would tell me, you know, when I open my mouth, people look at me like I have three heads. It's like yeah. I'm from Haiti. We have Chinese people in Haiti. We have white people in Haiti. Like, you know, mm-hmm. it's not such a weird thing, but it's just a lack of exposure that people have to seeing that. I do have one more question for you about this.
Sure.
So do you have that thing in Jamaica, like we have in the United States, where they refer to you as Jamaican this? So like, if you saw that interview that Raven Simone did where she was like, I'm not African-American, I'm American, and that caught a lot of smoke. Mm-hmm. Do people say, like, I'm Jamaican Irish, I'm Jamaican Cuban, like, or do they just say I'm Jamaican?
I'd say in very specific context. So if you want to get academic about it or technical, sure. Like a Jamaican Asian, like a Jamaican Chinese person or, mm-hmm. you know, a Jamaican Indian. But I think typically it's just Jamaican, you know, mm-hmm. is how we refer to everybody. Again, we always center that idea of out of many one people. We're in terms of our racial history, we are made up of people from all over the world. Mm. But once you're here, you're just Jamaican.
Mm. I want to talk about assumptions that people make about you when they see you. And so you kind of alluded to some of them. Well, people just see a black person first. Paris, what are some assumptions that people have made about you and your identity?
Well, people don't think I'm African, let alone Kenyan. The other day I was actually wearing like traditional clothes and this girl's like, oh, where'd you get that? Because I know you're not African. I said, oh, what did I do to you? Right? Like I'm just existing in this world. Yeah. So that's probably the biggest assumption where when they look at me, they don't see it. Right. I don't know what an African or a Kenyan supposed to look like, but I don't fit the bill. And especially when I open my mouth, everyone just thinks I'm American. Right. It's not until I'm like with my mom and dad. Right. Mm. And they open their mouths and it's like, ah, the link's been attached. But so I think that's the first assumption that people normally make.
Do black people make that assumption about you too?
Yes. Yeah. That was a black person. Like yeah. it is everybody. I don't think that's really particular to race. And I think I was trying to think of like another assumption people may make viscerally that I don't like, I guess it depends on your circles. I guess now that's more nuanced, right? Like whether you came from the struggle, right? Whether you're privileged, whether you're this or that, I think that's now dependent on like maybe some more factors. But yeah, I think that on its face, they just think I'm African-American, which is fine. Because nobody's going to know the difference, right? Like unless I say something, like what does an American look like? It doesn't exist, right? So.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that makes me, because you mentioned the context and the context and the struggles that people have. And it made me think of the stereotype that people have about Africa. Some people think Africa is a country and not a continent. But there's that stereotype, which is wild, right? But there's the stereotype that Africa is a continent of poor people and all the babies have bloated bellies and, you know, there are not modern resources. Have you gotten that stereotype before being from South Africa? And what other stereotypes or assumptions have people made?
I think like what always surprises me is just like how people stare. That's the first thing I notice. Like,
how they stare?
Yeah, like yeah. They stare extra, extra hard when you open your mouth. You know? I always find that interesting. And then it also, like, it's always mixed with a little bit of shock. So... and I don't know if it's because, sometimes I wonder if it's because, you don't expect me to speak, like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know, because I've had like comments like, oh no, your English is so good.
Oh yes.
And for me, it's like, you know, and then. Does everybody, like, it's always followed by, does everybody speak English in South Africa, you know? So, yeah, that's one that I've noticed. And in general, people get surprised if I'm like, oh, you know, if, like, let's say it's somebody else who's planning a dinner or something. And I'd be like, it would be nice if you could, like, make some dal. And then they'd be like, how do you know dal? You know? I'm like, there's Indian people in South Africa.
Mm.
There's just all these different, like, I suppose there's a view that we are not somehow, or just like Africa is somehow disconnected from the rest of the world, which, yeah, is, I suppose, just part of the stereotype.
If I could add to that real quick, I know something like they think you're ignorant. Like, I think there's this assumption that a lot of people from African countries are just not brilliant, which is shocking to me, right? Because I have the privilege to go back to Kenya like quite often. And so it's just like, those are some of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. Like, I can barely hold up, like, hold a flame, right? So that's really always shocking to me. Or like, for example, I've had experiences where with my mom specifically, she has maybe a thicker accent. And it's like, I'll have to like say what she's saying again in my American accent, because either they don't think she's speaking English, or they're just, they can't be bothered to try to understand, which is really, really annoying. But like, I've definitely gotten questions like, did you ride a giraffe to school? Or like, did you live in a hut? You know what I'm saying? And I'm just like, wow. It was probably when I was a bit younger, and I would probably play into it sometimes. I'm like, yeah, I rode a lion to school, came back in a zebra. Like, what do you want from me? Right. But as a general matter, it's like, there are huge cities in I'll speak for Kenya. Nairobi is one of the biggest cities in Africa. I don't know what you want me to say. Right. Like, it's, there's so many metropolitan areas, and yet they're also villages. Those two can coexist and be beautiful at the same time. So that's really frustrating at times. But yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious about, just from an international perspective, how Black people are perceived in the world and how they're perceived differently from one another. You know, whenever I go somewhere for the first time, someone tells me, well, brace yourself because, you know, there's going to be racism. One of the things that I've found, actually, to my surprise, is that I get that and I've experienced it. But what I get more often is getting a pass from that because I'm an American. And when people can hear my accent and they could like perceive a blue passport, it's different. And I've definitely seen a difference between the way that I've been treated and, for instance, the way that people who come from parts of Africa, who come to Europe or to Asia, get treated. You know, when I was living in India, there was a real clear difference, you know, what I observed between my experience and other people's experiences. Do y'all have any perspective on how where you're from as a Black person informs the way that the world treats you?
Yeah, I think I do. My experience, even when I was in New York, so I guess a little bit more of my history, did undergrad in New York, then I moved to LA for a few years, was working there before coming to law school. And I feel that each time I disclose that I'm Jamaican, I like almost immediately become one of the most interesting people in the room. And the reaction is usually positive. And I think it has a lot to do with like Jamaica, the Caribbean. It's like, this is the place that a lot of like North Americans vacation, you know? So they have very positive associations with the Caribbean, you know, particularly how it's portrayed in the media, as opposed to how, let's say, like Africa is portrayed in this one very specific, or Haiti, yeah. You know, is portrayed in the media. And I think, you know, I get a lot of questions about, oh, so you live on the beach, or, you know, it's all something positive related
to that?
It can be exhausting, you know? And I think it goes to your earlier question about the assumptions that are made about us based on where we're from. I've gotten the, oh, so you live in a hut, right? Like, I've gotten that. And, like, I was shocked because the first time I got that question, that was in New York. I'm like, you know, it's hard to live in New York and not interact constantly with immigrants from the Caribbean. So, like, I know you've been around Jamaicans enough. And, you know, particularly getting those questions in academic spaces where you assume you're around educated people is wild to me.
You just hear ignorance. Yep.
Yeah, I've gotten the, so how many times a day do you smoke weed? And like, where are your locks? Like, I've gotten all of that.
Yeah.
So it can be exhausting, especially when you feel like you're in a space where I just don't think I should be getting this question from educated people. But yeah, I've been in spaces where, you know, I've been with other, like, around other immigrant Black people, and we are, you know, interacting with, you know, let's say, you know, Americans or non-immigrant folks. whether non-Black or otherwise, and you feel the difference in the reaction based on where you're from, you know, based on what they associate with you in terms of what characteristics they assume you have based on your place of origin. So I've experienced that.
I mean, to Paris's earlier point about how these things can coexist together, I think that in every assumption and every stereotype, there is baked into it some degree of truth. And it's true that in Haiti, we have people who live in villages and smaller areas, and, you know, some people live in huts, but we also have people who live in very developed and, you know, places that would look the same as anywhere else in a modern day country in the global north, you know? And so those two things can go hand in hand, and they oftentimes do. Yeah, we have a machete, you know, at home. Yeah, you know, we boil our leaves for tea. Like, we do those things. Like, there are those cultural mores that we have that are really relevant and true to who we are. But that's not all of it. There's so much more beyond the immediate assumptions that people make. And sometimes those assumptions can be really negative stereotypes. Do you have any perspective on that?
No, I actually just wanted to add on to what they were both saying, that and it's also so crazy how I think what I've realized is that a lot of that is also like a bit rooted in classism as well. Like, people tend to want to hear what you want to say depending on like how they deem you, like well-read, articulate, you know, like it's all kind of, and I've also noticed, like, if somebody like from somebody with a thicker accent, I suppose, speaks, you know, sometimes there's less interest in what they have to say, so it's definitely like, I'm just acknowledging that even within like the let's say like us being Black people right now who come from different places, we also get treated differently depending on how we also articulate ourselves.
So that was something that I experienced being in New York. So my college was, they called it a Hispanic serving institution. Just it's a lot of people of color. So I interacted with a lot of Black people, but when I just moved from Jamaica, like, as I opened my mouth, you knew I wasn't American. You knew I was not from there. Like, I had a thick Jamaican accent. And one thing that was very exhausting for me was to speak to people and constantly hear them say, huh? What did you say? Like, constantly. And that was something weird for me because, like, we speak English in Jamaica. Like, English is our national language, but we speak it with an accent. You know, and to your point, it's almost this assumption of, I guess one of you had made that point earlier, is almost this accent makes you less intelligent or less worthy of attention in a certain space. And you know when someone is listening to you, you know, you also know when they're not listening to you, like, you see them disengage, you know. So I remember that feeling of being in a conversation a lot of times with like other Black people, and, you know, once the accent comes up, it's like I see them disengage, you know, and I'm sure that could be a number of factors, but sometimes there's just like this disinterest in listening enough to try to understand what I'm saying, you know?
Well, this brings up a really interesting point of, you know, the things that we're saying and how we're engaged with by other people. We're not just talking about people who aren't Black. We're talking about people who are Black too. And you mentioned that it was a Black person that made that one comment to you. So that topic of how do we engage with other Black people? How are we treated by other Black people? I think is a really interesting thing. From my perspective, you know, when you come from a place like Haiti that was the first Black country to liberate itself, you oftentimes feel as though you get punished for that in the world, the way that, you know, the world treats Haiti. But also, for instance, when my parents came to the United States, other Black people treated them badly. When we were in school, we would get bullied by the Black kids who weren't Haitian sometimes because there was a stigma tied to being Haitian. How do you feel like your interactions with other Black people go?
I went to an HBCU. I'll say that every chance I get. So it's a historically Black college or university. Yes, ma'am. So that was probably, I made a point to go to an HBCU because I miss being around Black people, quite frankly. And so there's, when you're in an academic space, your actual, the emphasis that Black people are not a monolith is blatant. It's right in front of you. You're not, you can't escape it, right? So my closest friends are Caribbean, right? One's like half Cuban, half Jamaican, one's Haitian, one's from Antigua, like one's Costa Rican. I didn't even know Costa Ricans made Black people, right? So it's like all these people from all over, quite frankly. And then there's also African Americans. And so there is, you had to be reckoned with the fact that there are different cultures in Blackness and you had to respect all of them. So that was my favorite takeaway from going there. However, I think just as a general matter, the Black diaspora, for lack of a better word, I don't think they understand each other well because of one, colonialism. I think that for a lot of the time, white people have been the ones pressing the narrative of what the other is like, right? So I know for a fact, like in Kenya, what African Americans are like before globalization, with those, before social media and like being able to interact with people, it was white people bringing that narrative, right? And then in the States, the narrative African Americans are getting of Black people in Africa is from white people. It's not from Africans coming over and explaining how like nuanced their life is. And so I think with globalization growing, with Afrobeats, you know, being like a huge hit nowadays, I know growing up, like, who is Burna Boy? You know what I'm saying? Who's Wizkid? Like, nobody cares or is interested. But now that it's cool, for lack of a better term, the relations have been a lot more cordial. But yeah, definitely, like, there has been a history of disrespect from one another that has really been frustrating for me to witness. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, this idea of Black people not being a monolith. Like, in theory, I knew that. But I think being here in this space, in Notre Dame and South Bend, it felt like a bubble being popped, you know? And the degree to which we are not a monolith, like, became very stark to me. I think being in New York, yes, it was this idea of you're an individual, like, you're going mm-hmm. to have unique characteristics, but I still always saw us as the same, you know? Mm-hmm. I guess in a sense, feeling like there was more that connected us than that mm-hmm. divided us, you know? I felt the same way when I lived in Los Angeles, you know, the Black people that I interacted with, like, yes, you're individuals, but every Black person I interacted with, I felt this experience of sameness, you know, mm. of commonality. Mm. And here was the first space that I felt like, oh, like, as a Black person, I can make no assumptions about you mm. based yeah. on you also being Black, because of how stark that contrast mm. can be sometimes. You know, like, I go to school with Black people where, you know, this is the most Black people they've been around
yeah.
in their lives, you know? And that for me was very eye-opening. You know, I don't know that I'd call it a negative, but it was very eye-opening that
mm.
we really are not a monolith, you know? Mm. So that was interesting. And I think I'm still processing what that means yeah. as I actively experience it.
I mean, I think it speaks to the fact that people have different experiences. And so the outcome of some of those different experiences is that for some people, their Blackness is not the most salient aspect of their identity, which is a surprise, because it is the common thread, you know, partly because of experiences of historical discrimination, racism, exclusion, that a lot of us see ourselves, you know, as Black. But I mean, kind of what you were saying too, right? You know, well, I was in Jamaica, Jamaican first. You know, but when you came to the United States, where maybe it's more of a topic, now it's Black first. And so I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about, because I don't know so many people where their racial identity, and maybe that speaks to just living in this country, where their racial identity is not the most, one of the most salient aspects of their identity. But Shego, I want to get to you on this, because you and I had talked about this previously, like the experience of being Black and South African around Black people in this space, you know, at Notre Dame. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I also think, you know what, I think, like, back to also his point a little bit, I'm just gonna add on. I think it also depends usually on the city. Like, I found that, like, you know, for example, back home, if I'm in, like, Cape Town, I know that I'm most likely, you know, like, I'm most likely, like I'll bump into, like, all these differences. I'll see the differences in us as Black people for the first time. For example, like, someone who's Black and grew up in Cape Town, and me being, like, sort of Black Cape Townian Xhosa, and then me coming from Limpopo, and then coming, I mean, Limpopo is another province, and then coming into Cape Town. So our views will also, like, differ, and, like, so that sort of solidarity will also be different, because I'm not from there. But then when I'm in Johannesburg, which is much more cosmopolitan, like, everybody's not from Joburg, you know, so there's just a lot more, like, more solidarity. Let's not focus on the differences. Let's see the commonalities and work with that to push us forward, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's, you know. So I think, like, perhaps when you were talking about New York earlier, I kept thinking, is this, like, not to say that Joburg is New York? Let the record show. Mm-hmm. But I'm just thinking about, like, just how, because everybody comes from somewhere, you know, there isn't, you know, there isn't many, I mean, maybe there are, but, like, I know that in Joburg there aren't many communities that can say that they were there from the beginning. Everybody came there when the gold mine started and, you know, migration. So I think sometimes it's also, like, just the city itself. So, like, for example, with Notre Dame, I think what I'm realizing is that, like, you know, conservative town, you know, very, like, I don't know, yeah, so it's and I can also, like, see how, like, even with the university, the diversity is a process, you know, and it's like transformation is something that's, like, still in the books and still being cooked. So it's, whereas, like, yeah, whereas if it were, like, let's say New York, I suppose there'd be all these people already, you know, right now.
Really speaking to just when we experience each other different ways as Black people, part of that has to do with where we grew up, where we come from, the population that we're around. I think that people really can have a hard time if they're coming from a space where maybe they were in the majority, and then they step into a space where they're not in the majority, and they'll think, well, if I go into the Black Law Students Association, for example, then I'm going to have community here, and that's going to be the space for me, you know, being that I'm in a minority everywhere else. Mm-hmm. But again, if that's not the sort of really defining factor for you, or one of the defining factors of your identity, BALSA might not be the space that you find the most community.
Like, I mean, I think when I last spoke to you, I think I was talking about how, like, one of the differences that I experienced was definitely that, like, coming from a country where I think, like, we are over 70% Black and, like, 20-something% white in South Africa. So, and then, like, coming here and realizing, oh, you know, we're in the minority. So, like, and, yeah, and just realizing that, you know, what my reaction, or, like, a reaction I would have in South Africa isn't a reaction I should necessarily have here, you know, to things. So, yeah, that was a bit, you know, I had to, like, work on that and snap out of it very fast.
The culture shock?
Yeah, and I also think, like, also realizing that, remember when I think at some point I was talking about the staring, and I was like, why do people here stare so much, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, I because then I also realized that, like, I haven't been around a conservative place that is still, like, you know, working on its, like, I suppose, diversity goals and, you know, and so I, yeah, a lot of things were like a bit of a shock. You know, where I'm also used to, like, major call out culture when it comes to, like, things like where race is concerned. I'm used to, like, you know, people getting cancelled, corporations getting cancelled over this stuff, you know. Like, I remember when H&M first came to South Africa, like, they, is it mannequins? What are those people called that they dress in clothes? Mannequins. Yes, the mannequins were all white, and, like, people were just like,
interesting.
Like, no, we're not going to have that here, yeah. You know. There was just, like, a lot of boycotting, and one of the political parties was, like, you know, went there to, like, tell them to close and lock up and, you know. So I'm used to, like, a lot of, like, outrage, especially, like, at things like race, and just, yeah. And because also, I think, I suppose, I also had to realize that that comes with being a majority, right? Mm. To an extent, because there's much more solidarity and a lot more, you know, we don't want our past to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, we don't want apartheid back. So at whatever cost. So, like, coming here, because, you know, and here it's a bit different also because, they're minority. And also just, like, solidarity is, like, you know, sometimes people really just want to, like, what is it? Put their head down and do the work.
Yeah.
You know?
Sometimes you just want to be a student.
Yeah, sometimes people just want to be students. And yeah, that was interesting for me.
Yeah. I mean, so this side of things, you know, we're both from a different place, but we were raised in the United States, but the both of you were not raised in the United States, and you've come here in the last couple of years or more recently than that. Nick, are your expectations, I guess, are you surprised in any way about how the Black community looks? I mean, you were saying a little bit about it already, but in terms of just the way that you engage, do you find it challenging to assimilate within other Black, with Black people at the law school or in general?
I think it's gotten better over time. I'll give the bird's eye view of, you know, engaging with Blackness in the American context. It was very hard when I just moved to the United States, because even in New York, as a place that has, you know, so many Black people going to a school that had so many Black people, there was this disconnect because of how, I guess, I interacted and related socially. You know, I felt like there was a specific way of engaging, of speaking, of conversating that, you know, I guess, folks in America, you know, my peers within the school, they communicated in a certain way that I had not learned or acquired the particular tools necessary to communicate in that way. Like, I was still, you know, this country kid from Jamaica, used to interacting in a certain way. So I think that was something that was weird. Like, I constantly felt othered, like, though I was around, like, Black people, you know, where and not othered in the sense that I wasn't accepted into the community or mm-hmm. wasn't allowed to engage with the community, but always feeling like, I don't even know how to have this conversation. Like, I don't talk mm-hmm. about the same things y'all talk about,
yeah.
The things that interest y'all don't interest me, you know, mm-hmm. and it
felt. Do you listen to the same music?
At the time, I did not. Like, when I moved from Jamaica, I only listened to Jamaican music and a bit of R&B, but, you know, dancehall, reggae, mm-hmm. gospel, some R&B, mm-hmm. you know. But I moved to New York, where my peers, they're listening to rap. They're listening to all these other forms of music that I just didn't have access to. You know, I didn't really grow up consuming sports either. So, like, most of what interested them, you know, mm-hmm. didn't interest me. So I found myself, okay, I'm in this group of students talking, but I just feel so disengaged. You know, I don't even know how to be a part of this, you know? Mm. And I think it's these social tools that you have to learn as you assimilate to a space. And I think it would be the almost a similar dynamic if maybe an American were to move to Jamaica. You know, there's a certain way that we move and navigate, you know, society. And that differs from place to place. By the time I moved to LA, I think, you know, I'd learned to move in the US enough where, yeah, you know, I didn't have as many difficulties. But I think for me, particularly as it regards just Blackness and navigating the Black community here, I think it comes with its own challenges. Mm-hmm. You know, going back to that, we're not a monolith. We, you know, have different interests. We enjoy hanging with different people. And I think that was one thing that was interesting and differed from what I had experienced prior in LA and New York.
Different political views.
Yeah,
differently.
Exactly. Like, but what in the US context, what I was used to is if you're in a space that, you know, Black people are in the minorities, like the default is that y'all flock together. Mm-hmm. Like that wasn't the experience here where, you know, you were making the point about Balsa earlier. Like I'm interacting with Black folks in the law school who they just, a lot of them don't resonate with Balsa. Like a community like Balsa isn't the space that they feel safest or most seen or most accepted. Like that was something that was very interesting for me to kind of wrap my mind around. So yeah, I think it was an interesting switch to kind of like take folks as they are. Mm-hmm. It's weird and feeling like the rules of Blackness weren't the same here.
The diversity can be jarring sometimes, yeah. Because you don't always expect it. Paris, before we start to wrap up, I want to talk to you about just kind of the experience of kind of standing in the two worlds that we were talking about at the beginning. Did you know when you were growing up as a child, were you aware of the difference between you and, say, African Americans who had more of kind of a culture developed through maybe Southern roots or the history of, you know, Blackness in America?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, keenly. I was keenly aware.
Yeah.
So I just know, like, when I first moved, I just didn't talk for a while until my American accent came in, because I was like, really, I think just that otherness, right? But you're a kid, right? You're not an adult with the faculties to be able to navigate that with self-confidence. And so that was probably the first ones. But yeah, like, definitely when people start talking about their Thanksgiving meals, what is Thanksgiving, right? Like, my family, it's just another Thursday. We're home, right? And for other families, it's like collard greens, mac and cheese, we got to throw down. And so it's like growing up and like knowing those differences and celebrating them, I think, was the way that I maybe accepted it. And I chose to learn more about it. I really delved into history very specifically to make sure that when I am speaking to other people who are African-American, when they talk about their family, like being originally from Mississippi, but like moving to Chicago, I know why, right? Like I understand the background behind it. And so that's maybe how I started out. I think in undergrad, I was able to now share, right? So I spent a lot of time learning, and now I was able to share, like, hey, like y'all do it this way, but we do it this way. Like, we should like hang out, right? Like we should do something together, and like doing hybrid Thanksgivings where it's like I'll bring my traditional food and you'll bring, you know, your greens and mac and cheese. Like I'm just learning how to make some good mac and cheese now, right? Like my boyfriend's African American, and so like being sure to like appreciate those differences in as much as I express my own culture, because the culture is different, right? And it's, there's value in it in and of itself, which I think sometimes can be forgotten. And so yeah, I really do enjoy exploring it and being part of both worlds. There's a safety in it amongst Black people. There's a danger in it in the world, I think, at large. But yeah, I really do enjoy it.
Do you ever wonder what your life would be like if you never left and moved to the United States? Because sometimes I think about, for me as a first generation American, the trajectory of your future, of the rest of your life, is so like, it's a, like, if my parents didn't choose to come to America, my life could be a completely different experience right now. Do you ever have those thoughts?
Yeah, I think when I go back to Kenya, right, like my Swahili is pretty Americanized, right? I have my American accent now. So I lost the accent, but now my Swahili sounds different, right? Mm. Or I'm not keeping up with the slang the way I used to. And so I think just like socially, a lot of the time I think about like, dang, like I'd be able to have stronger roots in Kenya and not only family, but friends. And then maybe like my career would be different, right? Like I have a very strong emphasis on civil rights. Like maybe it would look different in Kenya, right? Maybe I would be more interested in just something different. So I definitely think about that, but maybe not so often, because I understand the privilege that it was for my parents to make that sacrifice for us to really uproot their whole lives and bring us here and bring us through like the education and everything. Like I don't know. I feel like it would maybe be a disservice for their sacrifice if I dwelt on that a lot more.
Mm.
But yeah, sometimes for sure.
Mm. All right. So as we start to wrap up here, are there any final thoughts that you all have that you want to share about this conversation about Blackness, diversity within Black culture, things that you wish people knew, things that you want to say? Nick, let's start with you.
Sure. I think particularly in my capacity as president of BALSA here, I've learned, I think, to Paris's earlier point, that like this diversity, these differences are something worth celebrating. You know, it's put me in a position where I just navigate the folks I interact with just a genuine curiosity to get to know them, to get to understand their perspectives, how they see the world, and appreciate them for who they are. And to still come out on the other side feeling that there's more that connects us than divides us, you know, and just appreciate that diversity, appreciate that duality of Blackness, but having other individual backgrounds and characteristics. And I think it's something beautiful.
Mm. There you go.
I am hoping for like a lot more dialogue. And a whole lot more of just like, I suppose sharing, sharing experiences. And I think because, yeah, we have so much to borrow from one another, you know, and I think, there would be no point to me being here, you know, if there isn't a few things I can take away from here and, you know, take back with me at home. I mean, I think, especially like looking at the two countries and like how we're both trying to navigate like post, you know, transitional trauma and like I think there's so much we could borrow from one another, particularly with the Black Americans and literally also the like, you know, like the diaspora, I also just think whether food, music, there's so much that unites us. I hope for a lot of this. I know that BALSA's been trying though.
We try.
I'm hoping for a whole lot more dialogue, and I hope like we could kind of engage in a way in which is less safety net orientated, because sometimes I tend to pick a safety net over, you know, trying to engage fully and like within, let's say within BALSA, if we are like at a, an event. I'm hoping for a whole lot more of that. And I think from myself and everyone else.
Well, that's actually something that we didn't talk about. Maybe you can just say a little bit about it quickly, but you and I discussed the idea of individualistic versus collectivistic cultures. And African Americans growing up in a more individualistic society, whereas people who come from parts of the global South come from collectivistic cultures, and that impacts the way that you engage. So coming to a BALSA event and you kind of standing there and nobody really engaging with you, and then you have to be proactive and go to them, whereas when they're hosting the event, your expectation is that they're going to treat you like the guest that you are and bring you in.
I think it's also it's how we were raised, right? When somebody's in your house, you kind of, you know, you're basically hosting. And so you kind of act as a host would be. And I think, yeah, and whereas I also noticed it's generally different on like in the States, I think there's a little bit of a, you know, let me not be in her space, you know, where people kind of like, meanwhile, it's like, let me not be in her space. It's very, yeah, it's literally like, let me not bother her. No, she's not fine. And, you know, maybe that's what she wants to do. So the, yeah, I found that a little different. But yeah, but, I do think, I suppose those are things that I would probably like to, like we can all like discuss and, going forward, I hope that's why the dialogue is so important. but yeah.
There's
final thoughts. I definitely think learning from different cultures is really important. And I think binding together is more so important. Something that I'll say, and I think we've all said, within Blackness, right, there's diversity, there's nuance, but outside of Blackness, nobody really bothers to see the difference. And so we need to stand in solidarity in that, looking out for each other. Because quite frankly, in my experience, and I don't know what any of your experience has been, nobody else is looking out for you. So whether that other Black person is Caribbean, whether that other Black person is from Louisville, Kentucky, right? Whatever they are, being able to look out for them, I'm sorry, but because they're Black, and because, especially in this space, we are few. We are few in number, and there has to be strength in that support, in that sense of collectivism where we do, I know that I have somebody having my back, right? And it doesn't matter if they're African or if they're African American. So I think that's really important, and to maybe not feed into the differences that I think others try to feed us is really, really important. Don't let white people determine who you are. I'm so sorry.
I think that a good takeaway from what you were just saying and what all of you have been saying is something that I think is a truism about diversity in general, which is that diversity is a beautiful thing, but it's a harder thing. It's harder to be in a diverse space than in a space where everyone looks like you, thinks like you. You know, it challenges you more, but it challenges you in better ways. It gives you an open perspective on how things can be that, you know, challenges and goes beyond what you've only experienced in your life. And so experiencing diversity within Blackness, I think, is a really informative thing. And it's a really great thing, even when it can be hard. You know, you come out of it better.
For sure.
So Nick, Chago, and Paris, thank you so much for joining me on the DEI podcast. It's been a really great conversation.
Great. Yeah, I love this.
Thank you for all doing the work.
Yes.
I see you all.
We see each other. The DEI podcast at Notre Dame Law School is produced by Notre Dame Studios. Every episode, we sit down with important voices in law, culture, society, and business to talk about issues that touch all of us. If you liked what you heard today, become a subscriber and get notified every time we upload an episode. And tune in next time for another great conversation on issues that touch us all. Until then, take care.